Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Doctor, take a look at the second document that's in front of you. Do you recognize what's depicted in that document?
Yes.
What is that?
This is a picture of Mr. O'Keefe, his chest, while he's at the hospital, which shows a lot of the resuscitation equipment.
Is that a true and accurate depiction of the of Mr. O'Keefe at the hospital, based on your review of the medical file?
Yes.
I'd move for the admission of that.
Okay.
Oh.
Exhibit 228.
Then. Permission to display briefly.
Okay.
Taking a look at the photographs to the left and to the right, do you see any indication on Mr. O'Keefe's body that is suggestive that the Lucas machine, where the Lucas machine was situated?
Yes, as I pointed out here with the blue arrows, that big circular mark there is the mark on the skin where the compression pump compressed the chest of Mr. O'Keefe, and it caused some rib fractures, and it also caused those reddening of the stomach and some hemorrhage in the pancreas.
We can take that down. Doctor, based on your review of the medical records, did you calculate the approximate number of compressions that Mr. O'Keefe would have been subject to based on that Lucas machine?
Yes.
What is that calculation?
His body was found around 6 in the morning, and he got to the hospital around 6:37, I think. So if they put the Lucas machine on him when they got him into the ambulance, and it's compressing at 100 times a minute, and that is from the time of the body being discovered to the time at the hospital, that's around 37 minutes. So if you multiply 37 minutes times 100 compressions a minute, that's around, you know, over 30,000 compressions that would have been done to Mr. O'Keefe's body in the course of his resuscitation efforts.
Doctor, do you have an opinion as to what caused the hemorrhaging that we saw on Mr. O'Keefe's stomach lining?
Yes.
What is that opinion?
It was from the blunt compression of the Lucas machine.
Is that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
Yes.
You indicated earlier that there is a difference between someone dying of hypothermia, complications associated with hypothermia, and a body that's already passed away just cooling, correct?
Correct.
Do you have an opinion as to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to whether Mr. O'Keefe suffered from hypothermia?
I do have an opinion.
What is that opinion?
He did not experience hypothermia.
Did you observe any signs of frostbite?
No.
Did that have any weight concerning your opinion, overall opinion, as to whether or not Mr. O'Keefe died with complications associated with hypothermia?
Well, if someone dies due to exposure to low temperatures, you expect to see not only the Wisniewski's ulcers, but you expect to see some frostbite changes in the extremities.
Based on your overall review of the medical records associated with Mr. O'Keefe, were you able to reach an opinion and conclusion as to the cause of death of Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
What is that opinion?
He died of brain injuries and skull fractures due to blunt force trauma of the head.
Do you hold that opinion for Mr. O'Keefe's cause of death to a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
Yes.
I want to shift gears for a minute, Dr. LaPosada, and talk about patterned injuries elsewhere on Mr. O'Keefe's body. You've obviously talked about your training and experience as it relates to recognition of patterned wounds, correct?
Correct.
that's something that you were trained in when you were training, correct?
Yes, it's very basic to the discipline of forensic pathology.
And have you also trained others during the course of your 40-year career on the issue of wound pattern recognition?
Yes.
You've taught courses and given lectures, is that right?
Yes, I have.
I'd like to show you Exhibit 167 with the court's permission.
Okay.
Do you recognize what's depicted in this photograph?
Yes.
How do you recognize it?
It's a photograph of the right arm of Mr. O'Keefe.
Did you review and consider this photograph and others in coming or forming your opinions, coming to your conclusions and opinions in this case?
Yes.
In order to come to your ultimate opinion and conclusion, or opinions and conclusions in this case, is it important to take all of the injuries that a decedent may have suffered into account rather than one or two piecemeal?
Now you have to look at the whole picture to understand what happened to the body.
Why is that? What's the importance of that? It may be obvious, but explain that for the jurors, please.
Well, there, when you're looking at changes and injuries to the body and trying to understand what happened to the body, there are different patterns of injuries on different parts of the body. And by trying to separate those and understand what patterns were caused by certain things, then you're able to put together a sequence of events that happened to the body prior to death.
What role do photographs play in a forensic medical examiner reviewing the medical evidence and coming to opinions and conclusions? How important are photographs?
Oh, those are huge. It's standard practice to always document at the postmortem examination important findings with photography.
Were the photos in Mr. O'Keefe's case useful in coming to opinions and conclusions concerning his injuries altogether?
Yes.
What about the injuries to his right arm?
Yes, those photographs are very important to understand those injuries.
Do you believe that there is a patterned injury on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm?
Yes, there is a patterned injury there.
Have you ever seen in your experience, either being taught or teaching, patterned injuries as they relate to animal wounds, generally?
Oh, absolutely. Very common.
Do animal wounds include both claws and teeth, dentin?
Yes.
So bite marks and claw marks might be two different types of patterned wounds that you may see in your evaluation, just
correct,
in general?
Correct, because when an animal approaches a body, there may be damage from the claws and also from the mouth.
Do you expect to see punctate wounds as well as linear abrasions?
Yes.
Do you expect to see certain bite patterns as well?
Yes.
What types of injuries, let's talk about animals in general, what types of injuries do animals produce on the skin of human beings?
Well, animals can produce, if you're talking about, you know, mammals, they can produce injuries from their claws, where you get parallel scrapes of the skin from the claws applied to the skin, or you can see a pattern from the jaw configuration of the animal, and most animals that attack or get in contact with the body have canines, so there's two canines on either side that make paired marks, and that would be called a pattern injury. So it makes parallel sort of gouges, and as the canines move in a horizontal pattern or a vertical pattern, the space between them can change. The other thing you see in an animal bite is you see not only the canines that come out, but depending on how the jaw is applied to the body, you can have little dot-like imprints in sort of a U-shaped pattern, which are from the incisors, the little incisors of the animal. So you look for punctures, you look for paired gouges, which would be the canines, and then you look for arced patterns of little dots, which can be the application of the incisors of an animal bite.
What is an incised wound?
An incised wound is a wound due to cutting from a sharp object.
Would you expect to see incised wounds from an animal bite or claw marks?
No, they don't cause, they're not like knife wounds. They cause more of a scraping injury.
Do you see the injuries that you're looking at in Exhibit 167, are these more consistent with incised wounds or the scraping abrasions that you just talked about?
Sustained.
Were you able to determine from your review of the medical records whether the injuries that you see on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm were pre-mortem or post-mortem?
Yes, I can determine that. They were inflicted prior to death.
Do you have an opinion as to whether or not the wounds that you see, the patterned injury that you see on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, is consistent with an animal bite or claw marks?
Yes, it is, very much.
Thank you. We can take that down. May I have just a moment, Your Honor? Actually,
yes.
Your Honor, may we approach very briefly?
Okay.
May I inquire?
Yes.
You indicated that, in your opinion, the wounds to Mr. O'Keefe's arms were pre-mortem, not post-mortem. His right arm, I should say, were pre-mortem, not post-mortem, correct?
Correct.
What's the basis for that opinion?
Well, a forensic pathologist has to be able to differentiate changes that happen to the body while the person is alive versus things that happen after the person is dead. For instance, there is something called post-mortem predation, where if the body is out in the woods and dead, then wolves and such can come and make, quote, injuries to the body. But we're able to tell from our training and experience that those were made after death. The usual way we tell is that when it's made during life, the blood vessels that are damaged, the heart's pumping blood through, so you can see a reddish color and maybe some blood around it. Whereas if the body is damaged after death, the changes to that body and those, quote, injuries look more yellowish and kind of brown because the blood is not flowing. So that's how you can tell if something done to the body is while the body was alive or whether it was done after death.
Do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that the wounds on Mr. O'Keefe's right arm were pre-mortem?
Yes, they were done while he was alive and bleeding.
You talked about death investigations. As a matter of fact, you mentioned something about what a forensic pathologist's role is in a death investigation to potentially send investigators back out to answer certain questions, correct?
Yes.
Did you see any evidence in the medical records or the medical examiner's complete records that any effort was made to send investigators to the location to see if there were any animals at the location at or around the time of John O'Keefe's death?
Objection. Sustained.
Do you believe it's important? Well, let me ask it a different way. Would following up with investigators be an important part of any forensic pathology investigation?
Oh, absolutely. You're working as a team to figure out what happened to the body.
Thank you. We talked about the theme and theory of differential diagnosis, correct?
Yes.
How does engaging in the process of differential diagnoses avoid bias in an investigation?
By after you have your findings and you sit back and think, well, how many ways could I get this finding? And so bias sometimes means, oh, I think it's this, and then you just stop. So that's a sort of a bias where you make a decision too quickly and you don't then stop to consider what other things could cause this same finding. So you have to consider not only what immediately comes to mind, but then you think, how else could we get this pattern of injuries?
Did you engage in a differential diagnosis as it relates to this case?
Yes.
Did you consider whether the injuries could have been caused by a motor vehicle accident?
I did consider that.
Did you consider whether Mr. O'Keefe's right arm injuries specifically could have been caused by being hit by a motor vehicle?
Yes, I did think about that.
Were you able to rule that out?
Absolutely. Not.
So the objection sustained, jurors strike that answer.
Tell me about, let me ask it this way. Did you come to an opinion or conclusion as to whether or not Mr. O'Keefe's injuries as a whole were produced by a motor vehicle pedestrian incident?
Objection sustained.
You indicated that you've done thousands of autopsies yourself, correct?
Yes.
You've supervised many times more than that.
Correct.
How many of those autopsies that you've performed or supervised have involved motor vehicle incidents?
Now, hundreds.
How many of those hundreds have involved motor vehicle pedestrian incidents?
Almost as many.
Have you performed autopsies specifically on individuals known to be hit by vehicles?
Yes.
Have you performed autopsies on individuals believed to be hit by vehicles?
Yes.
Have you engaged in differential diagnosis and inferential thinking in terms of developing an opinion or conclusion to a medical certainty about whether or not the injuries that you see on a decedent are consistent or inconsistent with a motor vehicle pedestrian incident?
Yes, that's part of what we figure out as a forensic pathologist.
Did you do that in this case?
Yes, I
sustained.
What are some of the injuries that you would expect generally to exist if a pedestrian is hit by a motor vehicle at speed, not 1-2 miles an hour, let's say 20 plus miles an hour?
Yes, one of the things you see is a pedestrian is, you know, standing upright and is impacted by this blunt object of a automobile or a van or an SUV. And what you see first most is the tissue is crushed where the projections of the vehicle impact the tissue. And when you crush the tissue, that gives you a bruise. So that's the first part of the pattern of impact. It crushes the tissue, it gives you a bruise because it breaks the blood vessels underneath the skin. And then depending on how much more force is applied, the skin can break.
So I'm gonna strike that. Next question, Mr. Jackson.
In addition to bruising, what else might you expect to find in an individual who has been struck by a vehicle at speed?
So let's come over to the sidebar.
Sure. May I inquire?
Yes.
I forgot where I left off, so I'm just going to pick up.
Okay.
As best my memory can serve me. It has been suggested that Mr. O'Keefe's right arm, Doctor, was injured by contact with the right rear taillight of Ms. Reed's 2021 Lexus LX570.
Objection.
No, I'm allowing that in.
Thank you. As Mr. O'Keefe, it was struck as Mr. O'Keefe was standing and the Lexus backed into him. That was a postulate put forward. I want to find out from you, do you agree with that?
Well, that's something to think
about. So,
I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm going to strike that question and answer.
Let me ask it a different way. Let me ask it a different question. Do Mr. O'Keefe's patterned injuries on his right arm, do they correspond to injuries that could have been produced by irregular fractured plastic pieces impacting his arm?
No, not at all.
Why do you say that?
First of all, those injuries are patterned injuries from an animal bite. We have the canines, we have the incisors.
All right, so I'm going to strike that, and let's see you at sidebar.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
In your report, Doctor, you indicated that Mr. O'Keefe's patterned injuries on his right arm do not correspond to injuries that could have been produced by irregular fractured plastic pieces impacting his arm. Do you recall putting that in your report?
Yes, I wrote that.
Do you stand by that?
Yes, that's my conclusion.
And you also wrote his arm had no tissue bruising from impact injury. Do you remember writing that?
Yes.
Do you stand by that?
I do.
You also wrote, neither did his skin show any array of irregular, unpredictable, randomly scattered cuts and scrapes at various angles and depths. Do you remember writing that?
I did.
And do you stand by that?
I do.
You also wrote that you noted Mr. O'Keefe had no bruising on his arms or torso. Is that right?
Correct.
And you also wrote, in particular, Mr. O'Keefe did not have bruises on his legs, correct?
Yes, correct.
And you indicated that that was shown by dissection of the leg tissue and muscle at autopsy. Is that right?
Yes, there was a special leg dissection done to look for bumper impacts.
Okay. You reviewed the entirety of the medical records associated with the autopsy?
Yes.
Including photographs?
Taken at the hospital, yes.
Okay. And autopsy photographs?
Yes.
And other data and documentation, correct?
Yes.
Are x-rays an important part of an autopsy generally?
Oh, yes. Usually they're x-rays taken of the body prior to the examination.
What do x-rays show? Why are those important?
They're important because they show foreign material in the body, like a bullet. They also image the skeleton, so we can look for fractures of the bones.
May I approach?
Okay.
Approach?
Yes. Recess. See you in a couple.
Please rise for the jury.
Okay. Spring.
May be seated.
Dr. Lapisotta, you can step out. Okay. All right. I did receive another motion this morning for a curative instruction. I'm not going to even consider this today. We can consider this at the charge conference. So that's where we're at with that. All right. Work it out. If you can't work it out, let me know. I'll come out before the jury.
All rise to the court, please.
You are unmuted.
Counsel, why don't I see you while the jury's coming in?
Gentlemen, may I approach?
Yes.
On the court's bench, there's an item that I'd like to retrieve back.
Ms., we need that marked for identification.
I need all three of them marked for identification.
Okay, and we'll do that afterwards. Just please go ahead.
Did you see any x-rays?
I did.
What were the x-rays of?
The x-rays were taken of Mr. O'Keefe at the medical examiner's office, and they were x-rays of his chest, his arms, and his legs.
Did you specifically review x-rays of his right appendage? Hand, forearm, arm.
Yes, they were included in the x-rays.
Have you seen x-rays before?
Oh, many times.
How many times?
Thousands, probably.
Is part of your job to review x-rays?
Oh, absolutely.
To make a determination of whether or not they indicate broken bones, fractures, hairline fractures, things of that nature?
Yes, it's part of the medical legal autopsy to study the x-rays of the deceased.
That's done in the ordinary course of being a forensic pathologist, is that right?
Yes.
Are you trained on how to read x-rays?
Yes.
Do you have to be a radiologist to read an x-ray as a medical doctor?
No.
Medical doctors do that all the time, correct?
Yes, it's part of general medical training.
And is it also part of specialized training for forensic pathologists?
It falls under the rubric of general radiology that a doctor knows. There are some specialized areas in forensic where you have to understand, like, decompositional changes that you can see on an x-ray that aren't something that you would see in a clinical setting.
Taking the appendage one item at a time, did you look at Mr. O'Keefe, x-rays of Mr. O'Keefe's right hand?
Yes.
Did you see any defect in the bones of the right hand?
No bony defects, and the tissue was normal.
Did you take a look at the x-ray of Mr. O'Keefe's right arm?
Yes.
Did you notice any defects at all in the bones in the right arm?
No, the bones in the right arm were intact.
No breaks?
Correct, no breaks.
Fractures, hairline fractures?
No.
Did you look at the upper arm x-ray of Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes.
Did you note any defects in the bony structure of Mr. O'Keefe's upper arm?
No, the bones were 100% intact.
No breaks, fractures, hairline fractures?
Correct, none of those.
Was there any indication in your mind, based on your review of those three x-rays, the hand, the forearm, the arm, that arm had suffered any kind of bone trauma at all?
Okay.
Sustained.
Was there any indication, based on your review and your expert opinion, that his arm had been broken, fractured?
No, the bones were intact. No breakage, no fractures.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Examination.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Dr. Lapisotta.
6 minutes till the afternoon. Good afternoon.
That's okay. You wrote a report in this case, Doctor?
Yes, I did.
Do you think that Mr., based on your analysis, was Mr. O'Keefe thrust backwards? Is that what you determined looking at his head injury?
That he was, I didn't understand, you had your hand in front of your mouth.
Sure, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You talked about a head injury that Mr. O'Keefe had that he suffered from?
Yes.
That caused his death?
Yes.
Was that caused by being thrust backwards?
Yeah, the motion was upwards, down.
Okay. And the way you just showed it could be a fall?
Correct.
Did you have an opinion looking at his wound that he was thrust backwards?
What do you mean thrust? His body went backwards. There may have been some applied force to it.
I don't know about thrust. I'm asking if you have an opinion. Your words. Do you have an opinion about thrust?
What do you mean thrust?
Did the forensic pathology diagnosis mean Mr. O'Keefe's body was thrust backward?
If you want to say thrust as indicating movement, that it went backwards, then you could say it was thrust.
Okay. May I approach?
Yes.
I'm showing you page 2 of your report, Dr. Lapisada.
Yes.
I'm just going to ask you to read it, not out loud, and then I can ask you the question after you take it, but I want to take a look.
Yes, yes.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Dr. Lapisada, what did you mean when you described that Mr. O'Keefe's body was thrust backward from a standing position?
I mean that he was standing upright and his body had momentum and went down and hit at the back of his head. So when it was thrust backwards.
You cannot tell forensically how much momentum he had, can you?
No, we don't do those analyses.
And you can't tell if anything caused that momentum based on the head injury, can you?
What do you mean caused it? It was caused by his body went backwards.
Yes. And so the amount of force causing him to go backwards, that's not something you can determine from the head wound, is it?
No, I can't tell you the amount of force. It was significant because he had the massive skull fractures.
Did you say it would be significant?
Yes, significant force.
In modern medicine, there are a number of different machines that can help us see the brain, like a CAT scan, perhaps?
Sure.
MRIs?
Yes.
Would you agree with modern medicine that the use of MRIs and CAT scans and other tools give a clinician an equal, if not better, opportunity to examine the brain as actually cutting it and holding it in your hand?
No, the actual gold standard is the pathology, to be able to have the brain in your hand, look at it with your naked eye. And we have conferences in the hospital where we meet with radiologists and say what we find at autopsy and see if their radiology was correct.
Can CAT scans and MRIs show contusions on the brain?
Well, they might.
Subdermal hemorrhages?
Subdural hemorrhages. Yeah. Yes, they
can. Herniations?
They can.
Do you have any doubt about the modern medicine and the use of MRIs and CAT scans? Do you think they're inadequate in any way?
Well, I'm not a clinician, so I don't use those to diagnose diseases in living patients.
Dr. Lapisada, have you ever had any experience studying the brain in real time, clinically going and opening somebody's skull and treating the injury before the person dies?
No, I'm not a neurosurgeon.
You don't have any neurological expertise, do you?
I'm not a neurologist. I'm not a neurosurgeon. I'm a forensic pathologist.
Do you have any clinical experience at all where there's an acute head injury and you're making an effort to observe it and analyze the injury as it progresses in an attempt to save the person's life?
I don't treat or diagnose living patients.
I understand, but as far as your background, have you ever had any experience, clinical experience, showing the progress of an actual brain injury in trying to treat it?
I understand the physiology of what happens to the brain when it is impacted by something, whether it be a bullet, a boulder, a fall. So I know what happens to the body to cause the changes from that trauma. I don't treat people for those injuries.
In observing a brain that's in trauma and making determinations of how long it's viable or whether the person will expire, do you know the process that a neurosurgeon would go through in order to fight to preserve the person or save the person? Do you know the step-by-step process that they would undertake?
To do what?
To try to operate or save somebody from a head injury, from a brain injury.
I'm going to allow it because of prior history.
Well, it depends on what the brain injury is. If you have head injury and you have bleeding on the brain that's pushing the brain one way or the other, it would be a subdural, then a neurosurgeon would come in and try to take that blood away so it doesn't compress the brain. So that's something that neurosurgeons do to treat head trauma. They can also put in drains into the ventricle of the brain, and that can relieve pressure in the brain because that brain swelling is a bad thing. So those are some of the things neurosurgeons do to treat brain injuries.
And can they remove part of the skull to relieve pressure?
Oh, yes, they can do that. It's called a craniotomy. They can take out part of the skull if they need to.
So there are a number of different steps that a neurosurgeon can take when someone suffers acute brain trauma to try to save the person, isn't there?
Well, the job of any doctor is to try to save a human life if you treat living patients. So certainly a neurosurgeon would evaluate the patient and decide if there's any treatment needed that could improve the patient.
When you've had cases in the past as a medical examiner where there have been issues regarding brain injury, wouldn't you agree that you have sought outside consultation with people who have a higher degree of specialty in brain injury than you?
Sometimes what we do is when we're examining the brain, we can call in for a conference and have a neuropathologist come in and review the brain with us.
And back when you were a medical examiner, you did that on a number of occasions, didn't
you? Yes, that's routine.
The reason why is because there are different specialties in medicine, and some are different and separate than your specialty, correct?
Of course.
And a neurosurgeon or a brain surgeon, it would be a different specialty than yours.
Yes.
And they're focused on the brain, yes?
A neurosurgeon does brain surgery.
And so how many times in your career do you think that you've assisted the help of neurosurgeons to take a look at brain study to help you?
I've never needed to speak with a neurosurgeon to look at a brain. Sometimes we call in neuropathologists and we have a forensic neuropathology conference where we look at brains with the interns and residents.
How often would you call a neuropathologist?
Maybe once a month we would have a routine conference.
And again, the neuropathologist, that's dealing with a person's brain after they're already died.
Correct.
So it's not a clinical setting or a clinical experience of actually watching the brain at work and seeing the injury as it progresses.
We don't do neuropathology like that on living people. The person is deceased.
You had an opinion to the jury today, and you said that you believe that Mr. O'Keefe died within 15 minutes?
Yes, I think that process would start within 15 or 20 minutes.
Is that to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, that opinion?
Yes, based on the severity of the injury and the brain swelling.
You're aware that there are numerous level 1 trauma centers around the country that deal with brain injury, right?
Sure.
And the idea is that people suffer all types of brain injury, and if they are given medical attention in a reasonable amount of time, there's a chance they can be saved. Yes?
Well, it's possible, but many are so severe that they cause death no matter how fast they can get medical attention.
Mm-hmm. In fact, every day when people get the right attention or proper attention, they're brought to level one trauma centers around this country to try to help them or save them. Isn't that fair to say?
I would hope so.
Do you think?
Sure.
When you looked at Mr. O'Keefe's brain, obviously it's after he already expired, correct?
Obviously, yes.
And so you didn't have any clinical observation of the progress of his injury that night, did you?
I was not observing him. I did not observe how he got his injury.
When you gave an estimate or you give an opinion about how long he was alive for, are you aware that there's certain tests that are done by neurosurgeons when people are suffering brain injuries but there's an attempt to save them?
Sure.
Have you ever heard of a Guzma coma score?
Glasgow, you mean?
No, but it's Glasgow, but you've heard of Guzma?
It's called Glasgow coma score.
Have you ever seen the assessment that a level one trauma center goes through when they're trying to save somebody with a brain injury?
I'm generally familiar with the emergency procedures to save somebody's life.
Have you ever read any statistical studies attempting to correlate the brain injury with the time somebody would live for?
I'm aware of that, and I see that in my practice of people who have survived brain injuries and die of something else. Then I can look at the brain and understand how the brain can heal or react to injuries.
And many people who suffer coup counter coup will go into a brain surgeon center, and many of them pass after time, don't they?
Now, every case is different.
Right. Some might live for an hour, hours, weeks, months, or survive the injury. Isn't that fair to say?
It depends on the case.
In this case, you don't have any objective criteria to identify the amount of time Mr. O'Keefe would have lived if he had the appropriate help. Isn't that fair to say?
I don't think it would have been effective because there were massive skull fractures to the base of the skull, and there are cases where the amount of force and energy applied to the head causing skull fractures, breaking the neurons, causing the brain swelling, despite rapid medical treatment, those people cannot be saved. They can't effectively stop the brain swelling.
Many people can't be saved. Did you know that about one-third of them do get saved?
I don't know what you're talking about. One-third of everybody has different sorts of injuries. Mm-hmm. One-third of what?
With a clivus fracture, coup counter coup. Are you aware that one-third of those patients survive if they get the proper treatment?
It depends on the amount of force.
Okay. Are you aware that a study would show, have you ever read a study by Isaac Wolf on clivus fractures?
No.
Have you read any studies on clivus fractures?
Clivus fractures?
Yes.
Yes, I understand what clivus fractures are. It's a part of the base of the skull.
Okay.
And
have you...
Oops. Okay, go ahead.
Please. Did you want to...
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you read any studies that tell you with the proper treatment, despite these potentially catastrophic injuries, that one-third of patients can survive?
No, but that's not the case we have here.
Hmm. And so in this case, I asked if you had any objective criteria. You don't have any objective criteria about the progress of Mr. O'Keefe's wound that can be a basis for you to conclude that he would have died in 15 minutes. Isn't that fair to say?
No, I understand what happens to the brain when it gets that sort of injury. I understand the time course and the physiology. I've seen hundreds of individuals who've had brain injuries. Some survive for a longer period, some die earlier, and it depends on the amount of force and the amount of brain swelling. And in Mr. O'Keefe's case, we had the massive skull fractures of the base of the brain and immediate swelling and subarachnoid and subdural. So he had a large force applied to his head, which caused the brain swelling and the herniate and the progression of the brainstem down through the foramen magnum that stopped the brain. It was a very forceful impact.
You examined his brain after you looked at photographs. You can't tell us objectively when his brain swell started.
It started immediately after impact.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell us what the progress of that brain swell was by looking at his postmortem photos.
By looking at the postmortem photos and the postmortem examination, I can tell the degree of force from the extensive skull fractures that were present.
What was the degree of force?
It was medium to large.
Well, that's a wide range. What do you mean? Quantify medium to large, please.
So I'll strike the comment. Ask the question, Mr. Brown.
What does medium to large mean?
Enough to cause a lot of fractures to the skull. He didn't just like sit down and lie down.
If he sat down and lied down, he probably wouldn't have fractured his skull, correct?
That's obvious, yes.
Right. And so when you're telling us you can identify that he immediately died or died within 15 minutes, I'm asking you for objective criteria. For you to give that opinion, I'm asking you what objective information you have. And so you said that there was a large amount of force, correct?
Sure, because there were massive skull fractures and there's a lot of energy transmitted to the brain, starts swelling immediately.
How do you know this wasn't medium force and not large force?
Because of the extensive number of skull fractures.
So are you saying it was medium or large force?
Medium to large.
Okay. How much force is that? Can you quantify it?
No.
What other objective criteria do you have to support your opinion that Mr. O'Keefe died within 15 minutes?
My training and experience of seeing thousands of deceased people from head injuries and knowing some of their clinical course, when they get immediate medical treatment, they don't survive.
But you would agree many do.
Depends on the case.
Okay. And in this case, you didn't have any opportunity to observe the progress of Mr. O'Keefe's injury that night, correct?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow that.
I wasn't there. The body told me what happened to it.
You have no assessment of the development of his brain injury and how much time it took that night, do you?
I do, from understanding the significant skull fractures and the swelling of the brain and the compression of the brainstem, that all happened very rapidly because of the amount of force that caused all those skull fractures on the base of the skull that actually then hemorrhaged into his upper eyelids. That's a large amount of force.
Was gross edema found on his brain?
I think it was swollen, yes.
But was that a finding?
Yes.
Where did you see that finding?
Well, in order to have the herniation of the brainstem, the brain swells.
Where did you see that finding?
I can't answer that. I just know it from understanding, looking at the pathology.
So at the end result, at some point, Mr. O'Keefe had gross edema.
In order to get the brainstem hemorrhages, the only way you get that is because the brain has swelled. And there's no, after injury, tissue swells, and there's no place for the brain to go when it swells, except down into the natural hole in the bottom of the skull where the spinal cord goes down. So that's where the pressure goes. So that seeing the brainstem herniation tells you that the brain has swollen a lot.
Undoubtedly, but it doesn't tell you when it began to swell or the progress of that swell, does it?
I don't know what you mean.
You see inevitably because of the swelling, there's the suffocation, but when you see that, you don't know when the swelling began or how quickly it progressed. You can't tell that from an autopsy.
Yes, you can, because of the severity of the skull fractures. I know there was a lot of force, and that force applied causes you to go unconscious, then your brain swells. If there was just like one skull fracture, then that's a little bit different. But this was massive skull fractures on the base of the skull. So there's a lot of force applied. So I know because there's a lot of force applied to cause the skull fractures, that the brain would swell rapidly.
You would be unable to identify the rapidity of the swelling if you don't know the amount of force. Isn't that fair to say?
Well, I do know the amount of force because of these amount of skull fractures.
In what you know is, in your words, medium to large force?
Yes.
You've heard of periorbital ecchymosis?
Yes.
And that's sometimes called raccoon eyes?
Well, periorbital ecchymosis just means bleeding and bruising around the eyes.
And you saw the bruising around Mr. O'Keefe's eyes, didn't you, in the photographs?
Well, it wasn't bruising caused by blunt force trauma to the eye. It was bleeding in the upper eyelid because the plates above the eye and the base of the skull were fractured by the skull, by the brain hitting it. So then that's a result of basal skull fractures and not the application of force directly to the eye.
Would you agree it takes a few hours for the bleeding to accumulate in the person's eyes?
No. As soon as you break the skull bones and the heart's pumping, the blood comes out of those injuries. So it starts to accumulate right away. It starts within minutes. You can see it.
So you would disagree with the suggestion that it takes at least 1 to 2 hours for that bleeding to occur in the eyes. You disagree with that?
I do disagree with that. It starts immediately.
Do you have any studies that you've relied on or literature or support for that?
I understand the physiology of what happens when you get those skull fractures and the density of the blood vessels. And if your heart is pumping, you pump the blood out those broken blood vessels into this small area above the eye. And it can happen within minutes.
Do you have any studies or literature to support that?
That's my training experience. I can't cite you a particular article at this time. I could certainly go look it up and bring it to you.
Okay. Let me ask you questions about the wounds to the back of Mr. O'Keefe's head.
Yes.
You see a linear abrasion?
Yes, vertical lines, yes.
Now, would you characterize this as a classic wound caused by falling backwards and landing on your head?
What do you mean, a classic? Every wound is different.
Every wound is different?
Sure. Every person's different. Every way that you get injured is different.
And so if somebody falls backward on their head and suffers the basal fracture, the wound, from your perspective, can look different.
It depends on the impacting surface.
Wounds on the same surface. Say two people fell on the same surface. Could they have different wounds on the back of the head if they suffered the same injury?
In theory, if they rotated their body, if you could reproduce something exactly, then you would see the same wound patterns.
This wound pattern is typical of falling backwards on a hard surface, isn't it?
We know it's from falling backwards and striking something hard.
Can the frozen ground be hard?
A frozen ground can be hard, but it doesn't fit the pattern in this injury.
We'll get to that, but is it hard enough to cause a basal fracture?
It can cause a skull fracture.
The frozen ground is different than a sheet of ice, right? It's not smooth and flat like a sheet of ice, is it?
It could be, I guess.
Okay. You mentioned there's some granular patterns in this wound.
Yes. Yes.
The area in front of 34 Fairview, the frozen ground, do you know if there was any impediments in the lawn that was frozen?
In the what? Oh, the lawn?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, sorry.
Yes, I saw the scene photographs when the snow was removed, and it was like winter lawn grass, so it was some green, some brown that was push down and like straw that was going different directions, which wouldn't give you that pattern.
Did you see the exact area where Mr. O'Keefe last moved?
I saw that general area, and there were a lot of photographs, well, yes.
You say general area. Can you tell us that you saw photographs of the spot where Mr. O'Keefe was lying when he was found?
Yes, that general area.
Could you see the ground where his head was? Can you identify that?
Yes, they with the scene investigation, they shoveled the snow off of that area.
You had never had a chance to go out to that scene yourself, did you?
No, I just looked at all the photographs.
You cannot see what's under the grass and the dirt, can you?
Well, dirt's under the grass.
Well, do you know if there's any rocks or impediments or bumps?
It was a smooth surface covered with grass.
It was a smooth surface? The front lawn was a smooth surface?
It was
surface?
A flat surface.
Flat.
Covered with grass.
Okay, and do you know what was under the grass, whether there was any pebbles, rocks, debris?
I didn't see any.
From the photo?
Correct.
Yeah. But you don't have any firsthand knowledge that exact area where he ended, what the turf was like, do you?
I saw photographs of that lawn where they removed his body from.
So you're relying solely on the photographs, is that fair to say?
Correct.
Do you know if Mr. O'Keefe was wearing anything that could cause abrasions when he landed to cause that scraping pattern in addition to the linear abrasion?
He did have a baseball hat on, but that would not cause the pattern.
The area of the abrasions, is that in the area of the level of where a baseball hat would be on the back of somebody's head?
Mm-hmm. It could be.
Could be. If somebody hits the ground and falls backwards, can they slide?
If they're on an incline.
What if they're thrust?
Well, if you fall backwards and you fall backwards on an incline, your body might move.
Well, what if you fall backwards on flat ground? Does the body, can it move after it falls?
Not really, maybe a little. If from the momentum of the impact, it might move slightly, but not really.
So when a person falls backwards and lands, you don't think their head has any room for movement?
Not significant.
Well, not significantly. Maybe just a quarter inch, half inch.
It's possible.
Okay. And did you see the scrapes around the wound of Mr. O'Keefe's head?
Of course I saw them, yes. Okay.
And they're all within, what, about an inch?
What are you describing? What part? Are you describing the tearing, the laceration of the scalp? Or the vertical abrasions?
The vertical abrasions.
There were maybe an inch and a half.
Inch and a half? Do you think that if someone fell backwards and landed on the head, they could move an inch and a half?
Well, he landed on something that had a ridge on it to cause the laceration in the scalp. And then with a little bit of movement, those vertical scratches were caused by some kind of like pebbly-like surface.
Okay. You mentioned that the orbital bones were broken and you had opined that it was caused by the brain. Do you agree that a brain is very soft, consistent with, for example, tofu?
Oh, gross. No. What do you mean? It is soft.
Is it that soft? Is that the texture of it?
Well, it depends on what kind of tofu you have.
Okay. Do you think that the orbital could have broken when the break on the back of the head split the skull and then would cause the orbital break instead of the brain?
The orbital plate fractures, if you look at the base of the skull after you take the brain out, you can see the fractures go up from the back to the front into the orbital plate. Sometimes when you fall backwards, the brain can also slap those orbital plates and cause some damage, but I could trace the fractures from the point of impact along the base of the skull to the part of the skull over the eyes.
Do you think the base of the skull break, when it separates, could have caused those orbital fractures?
I don't understand your question.
Okay. When Mr. O'Keefe incurred that head injury,
yes,
the basal fracture, do you think that the pressure the damage from that basal fracture, the separation, could have caused the orbital breaks in his eyes?
Well, the fracture of the plates above the eye, when the blood is still pumping, there's a space there where the blood can come down into the upper eyelid.
So you described the brain as causing that break. I'm asking you, could it have been from the basal fracture, from the skull fracture?
Yes, the fracture that was caused by the impact to the back of the head radiating to the front of the base of the skull.
So when you told us on direct it was from the brain that caused those fractures, was that just a summary, or is that to a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
Well, sometimes the brain can also, in a fall, flap and hit those. But in this case, I could also see that the skull fracture started at the back and came to the front. But it could also be contributed to by the brain hitting those delicate bones.
I guess my question is, when you've provided the opinions generally of what you believe and what you've seen, are these general opinions, or are they actually specific opinions based on the facts of this case?
They are opinions based on my examination of this case, but all that's based on my 40 years of training and experience.
Well, when you told us about the brain causing those orbital fractures, you would agree with me, at least now anyways, that it very likely could have been the basal fracture that caused those breaks.
Yeah, both.
It could have been both?
Sure.
Okay, could it have been just the basal fracture?
That's possible.
When you offered the opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, had you considered the basal fracture as the source of those breaks?
Of course.
Okay, is there a reason you didn't share that with us and you just said it was the brain?
I had no reason not to share it.
Okay. Was there any depressed fracture to Mr. O'Keefe's skull?
No.
Can you tell us a little bit about a depressed fracture? Depressed fracture is different than what we saw with Mr. O'Keefe, isn't it?
A depressed fracture is when something fractures the skull and then pushes the skull and moves the skull inward. This just had a fracture, but it didn't move the skull inward.
And you've seen depressed fractures in your practice over 40 years, did you say?
Of course.
In those 40 years, depressed fractures can happen from sharp objects?
Sure.
Pointed objects?
Sure.
If someone hit a person in the back of the head with enough force, with like a hammer, for example, that could leave a depressed skull fracture, couldn't it?
Certainly. You can hit somebody on the head with a hammer and cause the fracture, and then the continued force will move that fracture into the brain.
There was no depressed skull fracture in this case, was there?
Correct.
You gave some opinions today about you gave some opinions about wounds on Mr. O'Keefe's arm. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that.
Sure.
Could we have that photo brought up, please? Do you see all of those superficial abrasions?
Yes, I see patterned injuries.
Right. Would you agree that they're superficial abrasions?
Yes, they go along the skin surface.
How many punctures would you identify in that photograph?
There may be some punctures like around the elbow, consistent with the teeth puncturing. Most of them are the teeth scraping along the skin.
I'm not going to ask you what you believe the cause was. I'm going to ask you just about the wound. How many punctures do you see?
This doesn't show. There are other photographs which show more of them. But there's the little dot-like areas. Mm-hmm. You could call an area of skin puncture.
Can you tell us from this photograph how many punctures you would say are in that photo?
I didn't count them.
Well, did you suggest that there was more than one puncture on that wound?
I think I see more than one, yes.
Pardon me?
I see more than one on there.
Okay, could you give us a count of how many punctures you see?
Well, without looking at all the photos, I couldn't give you a correct number.
Okay. You've written a report, haven't you?
What?
You wrote a report?
I did.
And in your report, you describe many of those abrasions as punctures, don't you?
Yeah. Yes.
And a puncture isn't just a scratch. A puncture is a penetration of the skin, isn't it?
Yeah, a point-like penetration.
A puncture has a very specific medical meaning, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a point-like penetration of the skin. Okay.
And according to you, there are many punctures in that wound.
Yes, I can see 6 or 7.
Can medical professionals disagree on opinions about wounds and causes?
I suppose they can.
You also gave some opinions that you did not believe that Mr. O'Keefe's scratches were caused by having some impact with broken pieces of plastic or glass, correct?
Correct. They weren't caused by that.
Broken plastic or glass can cause a number of different angled wounds, can it?
It causes an array of irregular, random injuries.
It can have infinite different patterns, couldn't it?
Could.
There's nothing to hold a wound from a broken shard to be north or south or east and west. It all depends on how the force is impacted on the body, true?
I'm not quite clear on your question.
I'll try to do better. When you're talking about shards of broken glass or broken plastic, there is no set direction that they may cut somebody, is there?
Well, it would depend on the case and how those occurred.
They can happen in many different forms as far as depth, yes?
Well, anything's possible.
How about length?
What about length?
Wouldn't that change? Couldn't that change depending on how the injury occurred, the length of the wound?
Sure.
And in this case, you talked about your opinions of injury relative to a motor vehicle, didn't you?
That was something I considered.
That's something you considered. Did you know much about the details of the motor vehicle in this case?
Yes.
Okay. When you considered your differential diagnosis, did you consider whether there was any DNA on the vehicle?
I didn't look at any of that.
I'm sorry?
I did not look at any DNA.
Do you know if there was any hair on the vehicle?
I don't know.
Did you consider the scene itself, where there may have been a debris field? Did you take a look at the debris field in this case?
I know there were photographs of various pieces of plastic around the area where the body was found.
And do you remember where those pieces were found?
Somewhat, yes.
Did you have an opportunity to consider other evidence, like a shoe in the area near where Mr. O'Keefe was found?
I know one shoe was on his foot at the hospital, the other was at the scene.
Do you know if his hat stayed with him after he landed on the ground?
The hat was in the area where his body was found.
Did you take a look at his pants, the back of his pants?
I looked at that, yes.
Okay, what did you see when you saw the back of his pants?
Well, because he had bled from the back of his injury, and he was on a hospital gurney, some of that blood came down, so some of the blood was on the back of his pants.
Did you see anything else other than blood on the back of his pants?
I don't remember.
I'm sorry?
I don't remember if I saw anything else.
Did you look, when you were doing your differential diagnosis, did you look at any evidence other than physical evidence? Did you look at any data evidence?
I don't know what you mean, data.
Like data you'd find on a cell phone?
No.
Did you look at any of the data evidence from the defendant's Lexus?
No, other than looking at the contours of the back to see if it had impacted Mr. O'Keefe.
When you were doing differential diagnosis, did you look at any information that would tell you what the speed of that impact may have been or allegedly was?
Well, it didn't hit him, so it doesn't matter.
Oh. Okay. So you didn't care to know anything about the car or the data in the car because you had already formed your opinion?
It did not hit him, so it was not relevant to my opinion.
Is that
By looking at the body, I could tell that there was no evidence of impact with a vehicle. Whether the vehicle was going slow or fast is not relevant.
And so you didn't try to get any information about the speed of the vehicle? It was totally irrelevant to you?
Correct.
And did you also disregard, let me ask you, do you ever look at statements?
I look at witness statements if they're available to me.
Were any of the defendants' statements made available to you?
I did hear some of them.
Did you consider the ones that you heard?
Of course. Oh.
Which ones did you hear?
I really can't answer that. I don't know what you'd have to give me an example.
You said that when Mr. O'Keefe first incurred his injury, you think that he was unconscious?
Yes, I think that the severity of the impact made him immediately unconscious.
So if hypothetically Mr. O'Keefe incurred his injury sometime around 12:32, is it your opinion that he never moved again until he was moved physically by somebody else?
I don't know the exact time that he got the injury on the back of the head, but after that time, he could not carry out any purposeful activity.
May I approach sidebar, Your Honor?
Okay. All right, so jurors, rather than keep you here while we do some things, I'm going to excuse you for lunch. Lunch will be about 50 minutes or an hour, and when you come back, we will go straight through the afternoon. We're going to do everything we need to do now.
Chris, please follow me. Close your notebooks, please.
And Dr. Officer, I'm going to follow him out.
Okay. Thank you.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from 2 closet finishes and 4 colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.